some more of that. Keep going. Program. It is 7 past the hour. This is the annual solstice, Hanukkah, what happened to music? Christmas, whatever you want to call it, program, holiday program. We try to include anybody and everybody, plus all of us atheists, too. I mean, we have a stake in this, too, on this particular program. I think we have some really interesting stuff for people who are regular listeners to the program tonight. Molly is going to do her usual night before Christmas reading. And if you're watching on live stream, you see all the festive lights back here, right? Isn't that cool? oh my God. Molly's going to be reading the night before Christmas. And, a Lemony Snicket book. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the writer Lemony Snicket, but he has one called The Lafka Who Couldn't Stop Screaming, A Christmas Story. Actually, it's a Hanukkah story, but we're going to be doing that. And I think we'll do this, The Lafka Who Couldn't Stop Screaming. That'll probably be at the bottom of this hour. And then the bottom of the next hour, Molly will do Night Before Christmas. Also, Bob Alexander sent us an episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Remember when we used to do these? Or those. This is from 2009, and it's a Christmas radio gumshoe. Some of you will remember. I think you'll like it. Also, some stuff from the archives. Jim Pecoraro dug around in the vaults at the White Rose Society, which anyone can do, and he found a couple from 2003. From our Christmas program. One is Little Rummy Boy. That was, who did that, Kathy? Huh? Nick in Warsaw, Ohio. I have no idea whatever happened to Nick, but we have that. What else do we have? Here comes Wolfowitz. Also by Nick in Warsaw, Ohio. Now, some of the stuff is pretty dated, but we thought we'd dig it out of the archives, or Jim did, John did, Jim did, because it's kind of fun. We're also going to do O Holy Nightmare, which is a perennial favorite. What else? What else we got, Candy? Is that about it? Just a jam-packed show, huh?
Radio Gumshoe.
Yeah, Radio Gumshoe. I mentioned that. So stick around, because the programming tonight is going to be a little bit different from what we do most nights. And thanks very much to Bob Alexander and Jim Pecoraro, who found all this material and put it together. Now, we're going to, whoops, watch out, camera. We're going to do, some live stuff with Molly here tonight. And she's been kind of a strange mood today when we did a rehearsal, so I don't know what's going to happen. I have to keep her away from these flashcards. If you're familiar with my flashcards, you know that we hide those when the kid is in the room. This is a way we express ourselves seriously when we do video streaming, and stay away from the FCC's rules and regs. All right. To begin, I think what I want to do, last night at midnight, about 12:35 last night, began the winter solstice, and we did a piece from Bridget Wolf, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, oh my God, had written specifically for that celebration. And tonight, I have something here written about Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights. It began at sundown two nights ago, December 20th. And for those of you who don't know, and I know most of you do, but we're going to go through it anyway, because it's mentioned in the Lafka Who Couldn't Stop Screaming that Molly and I are going to read later. But it's a relatively minor holiday, actually. Hanukkah is in the Jewish year. But here in the U.S., because of its closeness to Christmas, it's gotten a lot greater attention, Hanukkah has, than perhaps in other countries or societies. And Hanukkah has the gift-giving tradition also. The Hanukkah story, and again, I'm sure everybody listening knows this, but I'm going to do it anyway. About 2,200 years ago, a Greek-Syrian ruler, Antiochus IV, or Antiochus, you have your choice there, Antiochus IV, tried to force Greek culture upon people in his territory. And the Jews in Judea, which is now called Israel, were forbidden their most important religious practices, as well as being able to study the Torah. And although vastly outnumbered, religious Jews in the region took up arms to protect their community and their region. And they were led by Mattathias the Hasmonean, and later his son Judah the Maccabee. And the rebel armies became known as the Maccabees. After 3 years of fighting, in the year 3597, in the Jewish calendar, in the Hebrew calendar, or about 165 BCE, the Maccabees victoriously reclaimed the temple on Jerusalem's Mount Moriah. Next, they prepared the temple for rededication. In Hebrew, Hanukkah means dedication. In the temple, they found only enough purified oil to kindle the temple light for a single day, but miraculously, the light continued to burn for 8 days. And the lighting of the menorah is the most important Hanukkah tradition. That's the candle stand with 9 branches. 8 candles, one for each day of Hanukkah, the same height. A taller one in the middle is the shamash candle, or the servant, which is used to light the others. And each evening of Hanukkah, one more candle is lit with a special blessing. The menorah symbolizes anything that the family wants it to symbolize, the burning light in the temple, as well as making the 8 days of the Hanukkah festival. Some say it also celebrates the light of freedom won by the Maccabees for the Jewish people, or it could be, as in the Celtic tradition, an inducement to the sun, S-O-S-U-N, to return. But they all of these holidays kind of tie together, don't they? And I think they all have pretty much the same basis. At least they do to me. This is how your favorite radio atheist. I appreciate all these celebrations. Don't get me wrong. You know, I don't walk by a Catholic church on Christmas Eve when midnight mass is going on and say, "Bah, humbug." Matter of fact, sometimes Kathy and I go for the medieval aspect of it. The Hanukkah tradition. I find interesting, and when I've been with family celebrating Hanukkah, it's fun. Same with Christmas. Families that celebrate Christmas, we put up a solstice or a Christmas or a Hanukkah bush, anything you want to call it, in this house. We do. That's what these lights are about. We put up a Christmas tree. We put wreaths on the door. And of course, when we call it a Christmas tree, that's kind of what our culture calls it. I don't think that lighting Christmas tree or pine trees back in the Middle East was had anything to do with the celebration of the Christian Messiah. But it's fun. To us, it's fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy the holiday season a lot. The only part I don't like is going to the mall. So we don't do that. We try to stay away from there. We go to little local artisans to buy gifts for each other and our friends and so on and so forth. Okay? You got that? Stick around. We have more fun and frivolity tonight. We're going to open up the phone lines, too, during this break. So if you want to call in, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hangovers, rigging up the lights.
Christmas cards,
hangovers, rigging up the lights,
and finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, 5 months of bills.
Sending Christmas cards,
hangovers, rigging up the lights,
and finding a Christmas tree.
sixth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me.
Facing my in-laws.
5 months of bills.
Oh, I hate those Christmas cards.
Ease your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Oh my goodness, what's that all about? Huh? It's 21 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on our holiday show. Hold on a second while I send this email. So, Kathy can get the chat room. If you want to join us in the chat room or in live stream, just go to livestream.com, find Mike Malloy's show, and join us. Or what do? Just go to our website, mikemalloy.com. Go to mikemalloy.com, and you can look and listen if you like. Whatever your little heart wants to do, okay? What else we got? Oh, yeah, I hate to bring these things up since it is our holiday program, but one of the topics we talk about a lot on this program, as most of you know, is the insanity of telling folks who happen to be gay that they can't make a contract the way people who happen not to be gay can. And usually the Republican members of the House and the Senate or the various state legislatures who do everything in their power to stop gay folk from forming marriage contracts do so on the basis that they're defending heterosexual marriage. The implication to me being, and I think to most people, that if gay folk are allowed to do the same craziness that non-gay folk are allowed to do, i.e. get married, and get divorced and, you know, all that stuff. Well, talk to Newt Gingrich about that. But somehow, gay folk making the same kind of contract as non-gay folk will put the non-gay marriages in horrible jeopardy. Right? Isn't that usually, it's the Defense of Marriage Act, as though gay people getting married will be such a threat to not gay people. Well, in Minnesota, the, Senate Majority Leader up there, Amy Koch, C-O-C-H, is it pronounced Koch? She was the first female Majority Leader of the Minnesota Senate, and she has resigned as of, I think, today. And the reason Minnesota Senate Majority Leader Amy Koch, who's a Republican, of course, the reason she resigned is because of allegations of her affair with a Senate staffer. Now, Koch is married and has a child, and she was one of the proponents of Minnesota's 2012, this year, anti-gay marriage constitutional amendment. So, you know, homosexual people cannot get married in Minnesota, but apparently that didn't stop Amy Koch from blowing her marriage to pieces. I mean, the hypocrisy is so thick and so deep and so smelly among these right-wingers, right? At a Capitol news conference last Friday, another Republican, Senator Jeff Michael, said Senate staff recently brought up allegations of a, quote, inappropriate relationship between Majority Leader Amy Koch and a Senate staffer. And Mr. Michael, Jeff Michael, said, quote, we sit here with a lot of humility, sadness, and shock. He said he didn't know how long Amy Koch's relationship was going on, and legally can't discuss the name of the Senate staffer involved with Senator Koch. He could only specify that it was inappropriate, a conflict of interest, and created an unstable work environment of her staff. How could that be? What is Amy doing? Is she getting together with her boyfriend or girlfriend? It doesn't specify the gender of the person she's having the affair with. Is she getting together with her boyfriend or girlfriend in front of the staff? Is that what creates an inappropriate work relationship? I don't know. One thing I do know, though, is that Republicans are just so screwball-y where it comes to sex. Their own, other people's, heterosexual sex, homosexual sex. Rick Santorum cannot tell the difference between animals copulating and humans. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So in this season of birth, I thought it would be appropriate to talk about, just momentarily, I'm finished, about the demise of Minnesota Senate Majority Leader Amy Koch's political career, because in all her ardent attempts to make it illegal by the state constitution for gay folk to form a marriage contract, she was very busy with her own little extramarital romp. The hypocrisy is unbelievable. Stick around. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Christopher Ouellette Croucher, his message, your present for your birthday, little Tesla, one you may even appreciate when you're older, Dad. Thank you, Christopher. All right. Lemony Snicket, the latke who couldn't stop screaming. You ready to do this, Molly?
I'm ready very much.
You ready very much? Okay. You might want to leave the microphone right here. Okay.
It's right in my face.
Okay. Don't move the microphone. Okay? All right. Because if you move the microphone, then the studio will explode. This story ends in someone's mouth, but it begins in a tiny village more or less covered in snow. The snow had fallen during the long night, during which children had pressed their faces to the windows, looking for a glimpse of a man who they suspected of bringing them wonderful gifts. But instead, they heard a terrible noise coming from a certain cottage in the neighboring arrondissement, a word which here means place where something was being born. This cottage was already regarded with some suspicion, as it was the only place not decorated with flashing colored lights at this time of year. The thing that was being born was a latke, a word which here means potato pancake. Latkes are a traditional part of the celebration of Hanukkah, a holiday commemorating a miraculous Jewish military victory. Nearly everything in this world is born screaming, and the latke was no exception, even though the latke wasn't conceived and born the way you and I were conceived and born, but instead was fashioned from grated potatoes, chopped onion, beaten eggs, and a dash or two of salt. Once these ingredients were properly mixed, the latke was slapped into a pan full of olive oil, heated to a very high temperature, and this is when it began to scream. The latke was suffering so much that it leapt out of the hot pan and ran out the window of the cottage and began to run screaming down the boulevard. This may seem like unusual behavior for a potato pancake, but this is a Christmas story in which things tend to happen that would never occur in real life. The latke ran past a row of flashing colored lights, which hung from the rain gutters of a less suspicious cottage. "What's all the ruckus?" said the lights in unison. "We're the ones who are supposed to be dominating the neighborhood with our cheerful glow."
"I was just thrown into a pan of boiling oil,"
the latke cried in reply.
"Can you believe it?"
"Yes," said the flashing colored lights, "but we can't imagine why."
"To the latke,"
said the latke.
The olive oil reminds us of the oil used to rededicate the temple following to defeat the Antiochus of the hands of the Maccabees. The oil was only supposed to last for one night, but it was a miracle. It lasted fried. Plus, frying makes my skin crispy and brown."
"So you're basically hash browns," said the flashing colored lights. "Maybe you can be served alongside a Christmas ham."
"I'm not hash browns,"
cried the latke.
"I'm something completely different."
The latke rounded the corner and found itself face to face with a candy cane, which wrinkled up its red and white nose at the latke in distaste. "I'm trying to sprinkle the night air with my peppermint scent," the candy cane said. "Your mouth-watering smell, not to mention all that yelping, is spoiling the effect."
"My mouth-watering smell is part of the cozy feeling of Hanukkah,"
the latke replied.
"It reminds us that things are better now than they were in 175 BCE when my people were not allowed to practice their religion. In order to study the Torah, they had to hide out in caves. And when they heard the Greek soldiers approach, they pretended they were gambling with a small spinning top called a dreidel."
"Sort of like Joseph and Mary hiding out in the manger," said the candy cane. "Someone should write a Christmas carol about you."
"I'm not a part of Christmas,"
cried the latke.
"It's a totally different thing."
The screams of the latke grew quieter and quieter as the pancake ran out of the village into the surrounding forest. Its utter fury was unabated, a phrase which here means the latke was still very annoyed at the objects to whom it had spoken. But it was quite tired, and so it decided to rest for a few minutes beneath the branches of a little pine tree. The pine tree was napping, but woke up at the sound of an object plopping down at its feet. "Are you a present?" the pine tree asked. "Presents are pretty much the only thing allowed to sit beneath me during this time of year." The latke sighed.
"Presents aren't really a big part of Hanukkah,"
it said in a voice hoarse from screaming.
"There's nothing wrong with giving gifts to loved ones, of course, but it's more important to light the candles for 8 nights in a row to remember the miracle in the temple and the miracle of victory, even when you're thoroughly outnumbered. So you shouldn't give up hope."
"Plus Santa Claus," said the pine tree. The latke was too exhausted to scream.
Santa Claus has nothing to do with it,"
the latke said.
"Christmas and Hanukkah are completely different things."
"But different things can often blend together," said the pine tree. "Let me tell you a funny story about pagan rituals." But before the pine tree could begin its story, a family came trooping through the snow, searching the forest carefully. "We shouldn't have waited until the last minute to get ready for the holiday," said the father in the family, who was holding an axe. "We'll never find a good one." "You shouldn't give up hope," said the mother, and pointed to a pine tree. "Look." "It's perfect," said the daughter. "Beautiful," agreed the son. "Such a marvelous shape," said the mother. "And its skin looks so crispy," said the father, and reached down and scooped up the latke from the snow. "We'll need to reheat it, of course, but this would be perfect for Hanukkah dinner, with a topping of applesauce, sour cream, or even jam." "I'll refry it in oil," said the mother, "to remind us of the rededication of the temple." "And the triumph of the Maccabees over Antiochus," said the daughter. "After hiding in caves all that time," the son chimed in. The father smiled down at the latke in his mitkin and then stared curiously at his other hand. "What was I thinking bringing this axe?" he said to himself. The family trudged back to the village, walked past all the cottages with flashing colored lights, and smiling politely at the candy canes until they reached their own home. The family carried the latke into their own home, which was warm and cozy, and sat down at the table, which was lit with the flickering candles of a menorah, which is a branched candelabra designed specifically for the holidays. It is very frustrating not to be understood in this world. If you say one thing and keep being told that you mean something else, it can make you want to scream. But somewhere in the world, there's a place for all of us, whether you are an electric form of decoration, a peppermint-scented sweet, a source of timber, or a potato pancake. On a cold, snowy night, everyone and everything should be welcomed somewhere. And the latke was welcomed into a home full of people who understood what a latke is and how it fits into its particular holiday.
And they ate it.
And then they ate it. The latke. Oh, we got a picture in here. Let me see. Where's the last picture? Oh, there it is. There's the last picture of the latke being celebrated. All right, Molly, that was very good. So now you understand about three different holidays, three different celebrations of this time of year. What's the Christian celebration?
Christmas.
And what does Christmas signify? The birth of who?
Jesus.
What is Hanukkah? What is Hanukkah? What do you mean you don't know? You can talk of it. It was what you just talked about. It's the lighting of the candles to celebrate the oil that was found in the temple that lasted for 8 days when the Maccabees took the temple back. And what is the Celtic or pagan celebration? That's the holly and the ivy and the Christmas trees and all of the stuff that we have in our house, right? So all three of these, though, they all seem to have one aspect that's the same, and that's the light. The lights of the candles, the lights of the trees, the lights of the... Kwanzaa comes later.
It's a completely different thing.
Yeah, it's like a latke, right? It's like a latke. All right, honey, you can come back in a little while and do Night Before Christmas, okay?
Okay, bye, everyone. I'll be back later to do the Night Before Christmas.
Yes, and she will. Okay. Thank you, Molly. Shut the door of the studio, sweetie. Thank you very much. Okay. Well, we got through that part without any kind of an FCC violation. Did I mention that this hour is sponsored by Christopher Ouellette Croucher, whose message? A present for your birthday, little Tesla, one you may even appreciate when you're older. Dad. That's very sweet, Dad. Oh, and I guess I should mention this, too. The program tonight is brought to you by Vulture's Picnic. That's a new book by Greg Palas, one of America's best investigative reporters and one of the funniest. You should read Vulture's Picnic. Get the first chapter free at either gregpalas.com or vulturespicnic.org. It's a hell of a book, so you need to get it and read it, okay? All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. A couple of phone calls. Oh, no, what are we doing when we come back? What's up next? Something is Little Rummy Boy in honor of Donald Rumsfeld. All right, stick around, folks. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Christopher Ouellette Croucher. Thanks, Christopher. His message, your present for your birthday, little Tesla, one you may even appreciate when you're older. Signed, Dad. Nice message, and thank you, Christopher. All right, little rummy boy. This was, open your mic, Kathy. This was, who did this?
Nick in Warsaw, Ohio, was a regular caller to the program, pre-Air America. This is when you were...
This is way back.
Yeah, this is when you were on the IE America radio network. Mm-hmm. This comes from circa 2003. This is before I was even pregnant. Or maybe I was just... I think I was.
Just, I think you were pregnant.
I was just barely pregnant. Right. We found out that Christmas I was pregnant. So how about that? So he used to call the show, and he wrote these little Christmas songs. And he had, and so one night he did Little Rummy Boy. And then the same show... He called back in and sang Here Comes Wolfowitz, which I think is even funnier. But this is a, so this is a clip from 2003 from our Christmas show and our holiday show, Yulapalooza. And it'll have your own introduction from back then. So.
Okay. Let her rip.
You remember Nick in Warsaw, Ohio, called in a few nights ago and sang for us a little his version of The Little Drummer Boy. Only it's... What is it, Kathy? Open your mic. Little Rummy Boy. Okay, about Rumsfeld, I guess. All right. Upon hearing it, our wizard-like webmaster, Mark Marshall, of MaximumInteractive.com, had one of those epiphanous moments. A light bulb went off over Mark Marshall's head. Now, Mark, in addition to being the webmaster at MikeMalloy.com, is also a very accomplished musician and artist. Does a lot of things. So he put this together, and we will now share with you Nick in Warsaw, Ohio's version of Little Drummer Boy with accompaniment by Mark Marshall.
Rummy told me Iraq we must bomb, and I believed him because I was so dumb. Though Saddam had it to do with 9/11, we have to find his weapons of mass destruction, his neurotoxins, his uranium. Oops, there ain't none. Rummy's butt saw crap and found the reason. He said we bombed Iraq to give him freedom. With a big contract to Halliburton to rebuild what we wrecked with our treasury funds and the lives of our sons, because it now all belongs to the corporations. We couldn't find those weapons, not even one, but we stumbled into a hole and there was Saddam. He is the boogeyman we can blame it all on. And we will just forget he was one of our pawns. We gave him the guns, then we shoveled in funds to oppress his nation. So now our president is smirking with pride. He'll find those terrorists in the holes where they hide. Climbing in the polls, but we ain't satisfied. Cause we've seen him on the job with his razor-sharp mind. And try as he might, there's one hole he can't find. It's in his behind.
That was from 2003. Whatever happened to Nick in Warsaw, Ohio? That was some funny stuff. Do we have another one of his we're going to play next hour? Here Comes Wolfowitz. Oh, my God. It's in his behind. Very quickly, Jeremy in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Anyway, happy solstice to you, Kathy, and Molly.
Thank you very much. Back at you.
Sure. I just called to pick on Boehner for his frick flip-flop.
Yeah, his flip-flop. Did you see that poor miserable bastard out there today when he went out there and tried to convince everybody that this was the House Democrat, House Republicans' idea to begin with, right?
Well, that, and then he said that we should do what's good for the country, not what we want.
Yeah, yeah.
How two-faced is that?
Four-faced.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I really want to call it. Next on him.
Okay. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I watched some of that today, and you could just see that the reason I think that Boehner ordered his people to sign off on this, and maybe not all of these teabag freaks are going to, but you could see that Boehner was definitely, desperately wanting to get out and get to that bottle of Merlot. You know, it's a long drive back to Ohio, right? And also, Bradley Manning today, the hearing in front of it's kind of like a preliminary hearing in front of a military court, but the determination will be made as a result of this hearing whether or not to put him in front of a full court martial. We'll be talking about this a little bit later, probably not tonight, but. We'll get to it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy Program, our holiday show. This hour is sponsored by the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. Blank? What does that mean? The Malloy and Skype chat rooms blank. What is that? I don't know what that is. Anyway, thanks to the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. You guys are great. The message, happy holidays, Mike, Kathy, and Molly. Thank you very much, folks. And if you don't know what that is, just go to MikeMalloy.com, and you can go to the chat room if you like, and just get logged in and join in. We are taking phone calls tonight if you want to call in, 877-996-2556 if you want to join the conversation, as sparse as it is right now. You know, I mentioned this the other night. I have a lot of stuff here on the stack to talk about, but I just can't get into it. When the year starts to wind down, especially, or around holiday season, when you have these festivals that are so focused on light and color and music and gift giving, like Christmas and Hanukkah and winter solstice and, you know, the pagan traditions that are woven through all of these holidays. It's difficult for me anyway to talk about these filthy Republicans and the way they are destroying the country. I realize that they don't take a holiday. None of these Republicans do. And the corporatists, the capitalists, they don't take a holiday. They continue their destruction. It's just hard. It's hard to focus on that crap. You know what I'm saying? You talk about this stuff every single day. And you get to a point where you just want to scream at somebody. Isn't that enough? I mean, hasn't there been enough of this? You know what I'm saying? Oh, never mind. I just get all mellow. It's mellow for me towards the end of the year. I got an email from, who's it from? Oh, my goodness, the name is cut off. Mike, 2011 is almost over, and that means everybody's making top 10 lists. I decided to get in on the action, too. Here's my compilation of the 10 worst Republican actions of 2011. The Republicans want to bring back pre-existing conditions as a reason to not get health insurance. Healthcare reform is one of Obama's signature achievements. My writer says, no longer can children born with health conditions be denied insurance. No longer can insurance companies deny care for so-called pre-existing conditions. And about 2.5 million young adults who lacked health insurance are now covered by their families' plans. So what did Republicans do? They try to repeal what they call Obamacare and put control back in the hands of insurance companies. Okay. Here's another one that my writer has included. Kick grandma off Medicare and give her a coupon. Republicans all lined up in favor of Republican Representative Paul Ryan's extreme budget plan earlier this year that would kill Medicare and turn it into a voucher program. Thank goodness the Democratic Senate was there to stop them and keep the promise to seniors. The next one, hand over cash to corporations and the wealthy. Another part of Paul Ryan's plan, give huge tax cuts to corporations and the wealthy. While the middle class struggles to get ahead, Republicans tried to make things worse by reducing taxes on the wealthiest and sticking everyone else with the bill. Now, you know, all this stuff is true. All this stuff is real. It's what the Republicans have tried to do. Rip away workers' rights. When Republicans won the governorships in Wisconsin and Ohio, among other states, one of the first things they did was to go after public workers, including taking away the rights of teachers and prison guards to bargain for better pay and benefits. Bad move. They clearly overstepped their bounds, and voters will remember at the ballot box in 2012. Well, I hope so. You know, I really do hope so. Not that I have a warm, fuzzy place in my heart for either one of these political parties. But for people who are still playing the game, I hope you remember which team decided to cut your throat and laugh while you bleed. Republicans this year decided that when it comes to elections, if you can't beat, then cheat. From Florida to Wisconsin to Ohio, Republicans passed laws that will have the effect of suppressing Democratic turnout in those crucial swing states. The Brennan Center for Justice estimates that more than 5 million voters will be affected by these laws, a number higher than the margin of victory in the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections. Yeah, but those two elections, to my writer, whoever wrote this, those two elections were taken over by George W. Bush based on fraud, theft, lies, and a corrupt, filthy fascist Supreme Court. Let's not forget that. Declare war on women. That's another thing that Republicans have really gotten intense about over the past year. It was bad enough that Republicans tried to eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood and other family planning programs. Then they tried to change federal law to redefine rape and to allow hospitals to deny life-saving care for pregnant women. So much for the Republican promise to have a laser focus on jobs. Where are the jobs? We need jobs. Where are the jobs? What happened to the jobs? The Republican war on women is alive and well. Another thing they wanted to do is shove gay soldiers back into the closet. It was a huge victory for civil rights and basic human dignity when Obama signed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell into law. Finally, all Americans could serve openly in the military or not. This year, Republicans tried to bring back the policy, and some Republican presidential candidates have said reinstituting discrimination is one of their top policy priorities. You know, when you read this stuff put together like this, it is just, I don't know, it's just, you see it all together like this, and you realize how, or I realize, how corrupt, how sick these Republicans really are, and what they're really trying to destroy. They want to launch assaults on Sesame Street and Lake Wobegon. My writer says, I don't know what Republicans have against Big Bird and Garrison Keillor, but they would do almost anything to shut off their microphones. In fact, earlier this year, Republicans vowed to shut down the federal government if NPR and PBS weren't defunded. Luckily, Senate Democrats were there to stop the nonsense, and Sesame Street and a Prairie Home Companion were given a reprieve for now. The Republicans want consumers to fend for themselves. One of the most important reforms passed by Democrats in decades was the creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that will prevent big banks from ripping off their customers with dangerous financial products. But Republicans hate anything that puts customers ahead of corporations, so they fought against this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And the people chosen to lead it, tooth and nail, and they're not finished either. And increased taxes for middle-class families. Last but certainly not least, this week House Republicans refused to support tax relief for the middle class, even as they demand it for billionaires and huge corporations. So if your taxes go up next year after this two-month nonsense that was signed or agreed to, apparently, if your taxes go up next year, you'll have nobody but the Republicans to blame. Which is only partly true. Obviously, this is written by somebody that works for the Democratic National Committee, which, you know, is okay. I mean, the facts are facts. But, you know my feeling about the members of the House and the Senate. They're Democrats, right? All right, stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Kids are never happy with what's under the tree. Soon they'll understand Christmas sucks. Whoa, every freaking year Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks. Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus.
Welcome
down
back.
Santa Claus Lane.
21 past the hour.
Doesn't care if you're rich or poor.
Charles is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Welcome to the program, Charles. Hello. Well,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to speak to you, and I thought I'd just call and hope I got in, and surprise, I got in.
Yes, not a lot of phone calls tonight because it's, don't know, it's a Thursday night. I don't have no idea.
Well, let me start off by saying about 99.5% of the time I agree with you. But what I'm curious about is I would like sometime when you have the time or even the inclination, why don't you, for those of us that care, explain your evolution from, I guess, being raised in a Christian home, environment, church, and how you evolved to being a flame-throwing atheist.
It's pretty simple.
There had to be a lot of things in between that happened.
No, not really. It's pretty simple. I've talked about this before. It's just my little personal trip. It's a little weird to talk about it, but sure, I'll answer that, Charles. I got to a point in my life, I didn't have any epiphanous moments. It was just you used the word evolution, that's a good one, just evolving from a belief in the very same kinds of things that you're required to believe in if you believe in fairies and elves and ghosts and haints and stuff like that. I understand the origins of religion. I understand that religion, for some people, is something that is very embraceable. It gives them something to cling to when their life starts to fall apart. It gives them something to cling to when they're dealing with a fear of death. But the idea, I mean, if you stop and think about it, Charles, the idea that there is some master manipulator sitting somewhere else, you know, or as the Christians say, or people who believe this stuff, not just Christians, but I guess Jews and Muslims also, this nonsense about some being sitting someplace on a mountain or in space or on a planet or in a ninth dimension and manipulating or watching everything that goes on here, it's crazy. It's just crazy. And I just got to a point where I could no longer force myself to believe something that I never really believed in to begin with. When I was a little kid, my grandmother was a hellfire and brimstone Southern Baptist. And even though she lived in Ohio, she was a member of a Baptist church. It was part of the Southern Baptist Convention. And, you know, I heard all those stories, and I didn't believe in even then. They didn't scare me when I was a little kid about you're going to burn in hell forever if you don't accept a certain belief system. All that did was make me realize that the person telling me that, in this case, sadly, my own grandma, that the person telling me that was so unsure of her own beliefs, she and the rest of the Christians, that they had to threaten everybody with eternal death and destruction if you didn't believe the way they believed. And I mean, to me, it's just crazy. I reject all religious belief systems for a very simple reason. To me, they're not true. It's just it's stuff that people talk about. It's a replacement for fear, things that go bump outside your door. You can go back as far back as you want and find all sorts of references to religion. Now it's being pushed back even further than people thought religion was first organized by people. But it's nonsense to me, Charles. It's just utter nonsense. I cannot accept the idea of master manipulators living someplace and half human, half god creatures. I mean, why not believe in the Roman pantheon? Why not believe in the Greek pantheon? Why not believe in, I mean, the Egyptian, Chinese, Japanese, Native American? You know, who's to say? Yeah, yes, yes, Kathy.
I was going to say the Norse gods, Odin and such, but no, I can boil it down for Charles if he's interested in my atheism had a fairly clear line. I was teetering on the edge for a long time until I took a course in evolutionary biology and started reading Richard Dawkins, and that was sort of the nail in the coffin, so to speak, no pun intended.
Yeah, I don't know if that answers it for you or not, Charles, but that's pretty much what it's about. Does that get it for you?
You got part of it, but see, to me, Christianity revolves around Jesus. I don't have anything to do with the pantheon of Greek gods, Roman gods, or any of that.
Why not? What makes your belief the right one and the Greeks were wrong?
Because I don't believe their gods rose from the dead, my God did.
Charles. A, why, but B, you're wrong. Go study Greek or Roman or any kind of mythology, religious mythology. You'll find all kinds of people that rose from the dead. All these saviors and sons of God and so on and so forth. Now, here's the thing to do, Charles, and I say this with respect for whatever you believe in. Go to your local university there in Minneapolis and take a course in comparative religion. Comparative religions. I'm serious. Take a course in comparative religions. Spend a semester or two studying and learning, and then give me a call back and we'll talk some more. All right? Thanks, Charles. I appreciate your question. We'll be right back. I've got to go away. Baby, it's cold outside. The evening has been so very nice. I'll hold your hands just like I ice. I know where we start to worry. 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by the Molloy and Skype chat rooms. Blank. Why does it say blank here? I don't either. Anyway, thanks, guys and girls, in the Molloy chat room. You can get in there, too. Just go to MikeMolloy.com and sign in. The message, happy holidays, Mike, Kathy, and Molly. Thanks. We appreciate that. All right, what are we doing now? Night before Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay. Boy, if I can find it. Oh, there it is. Okay. Now, normally we have the big book, but we decided that the big book would be too much of a problem. Now the night before Christmas, everybody knows how it was written and why it was written. A guy named Clement Moore. There is some argument about that. Who really wrote it? But it was a poem, and it became really famous. And next thing you know, everybody knows it, the story. So, whenever you're ready, Molly, go right ahead.
Okay, this is called Night Before Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out alone, there rose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window, I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. What to my wondering eyes should appear, when a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment, must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen. On Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
You want to get your breath? Deep breath. Okay.
As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the courses they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. Then in a twinkling they heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and he was covered in... His clothes were all tannish with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back. He looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses! His nose like a cherry, his droll little mouth drawn up like a bow, and the beard of the chin was as white as the snow. The stump of his pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly. The chicken laughed like a bowl full of jelly. Ha, ha, ha. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. Right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word but went straight to his work, filled the stockings and turned with a jerk, and laying a finger aside his nose, giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle. And away they all flew like a down of thistle. And I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
That is very good. All right, thank you, Molly. Very good. You like doing this every year? Huh? Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
You want to do it next year?
Sure.
Next year, maybe you can. I'll tell you what we'll do next year. If you continue to study the piano like you've been doing, next year you can. Maybe we'll move the studio out there into near where the piano is, and you can play some music.
Or I can bring in my little electric
keyboard. You can bring your keyboard. Yeah. Okay. Give me a kiss. Okay.
Okay, I'll see you guys again at another commercial break. So, bye.
Okay, thank you, honey. I appreciate it. The Night Before Christmas with Molly Malloy. Yeah, it's shameless. And the reason I do it is because these holidays are for kids, all of them. Whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or pagan celebrations, right? So, now, what do you do to follow that? I'm not sure I could go back to talking
about it. I can go get the puppy.
You can go get the puppy, right. Well, we're just going to make everybody go into sugar shock tonight, I swear to God. Phone calls. There we go. Oh, the payroll tax issue. Let's do that. Alano is calling from Philly. Hello, Alano.
Well, first of all, I'd like to wish you and your family a very happy New Year.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And on the break, I heard a wonderful rendition of If I Had a Hammer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you did. Oh, my God. All right. Yeah. Yeah,
that's coming through. But I also have one child, a daughter. She's 30. Now, I was going to talk about the payroll taxes, but I think I'm going to call an audible since you were talking about atheism. And
sure.
I'm an emergency room nurse. I've been an emergency room nurse for 40 years, and
you know, I've got to just say, my son is doing that now.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah, he's doing emergency medicine at a major hospital. He got his RN and his BSN, and he likes it. I couldn't do it, but I guess there are some of us who can. So I just want to throw that in. All right,
well,
go.
Thank you. you see, you raised him well. He's got a heart.
Yeah, well, he's also you know, his wife's a lawyer, so that kind of balances it out.
I didn't catch that. What'd you say, Mike?
His wife's a lawyer. So if Chris ever, if Chris can never get a job, his wife can sue somebody or something. I don't know.
Right. Well, I've worked deep in the urban area for the last 40 years, and I believe in no deities. You know, to me, the concept of a deity, it's always been a nebulous concept based on assumption and subjective thinking, and I just don't believe in any deities. I've had many epiphanies, which I'm not going to relate. You know, they're much too graphic, mm-hmm. which, you know, caused me to disavow any belief in a deity. But,
well, I don't, you know, I don't know what purpose any of it serves except as a form of refuge or a shelter. And I can understand that. If somebody wants to have something that they can turn to, a belief system or a philosophy in a moment when they feel like their lives are crashing down from whatever, you know, their own imminent death or the death of friends or illness or all those tragedies that happen in all of our lives. And if people need something to sustain them through that, I don't have any problem with that. What I do have a major problem with is the way, and I have to say that mostly Christians and to a lesser extent Muslims do this, just beat you over the head, especially the Christians. If you don't believe the way they believe, you're condemned, or they will hunt you down and kill you. I mean, when's the last time a Jew came up and said, if you don't convert to Judaism, you're going to burn in hell? I've never had that happen. But I've been, you know, different religions will refer to me as an atheist as something that is just one inch below something that crawls on the surface of the earth. And that, I mean, come on, jeez.
Well, you know, the other point, Mike, is, you know, they try and validate social and political agenda through God.
That really gets me, yeah.
And, you know, the interesting thing is I took care of once a woman who was a Christian Scientist. She had a significant fracture of the forearm, which would be the ulna and the radius bone.
Mm-hmm.
She fractured it at 9 a.m. She came in at 4 p.m. I said, you know, she was in such significant pain. I said to her, well, why did you come in? Why didn't you come in? We could take care of you. Why did you wait so long? She told me she was in prayer.
Yeah. Well, if you know, that's the interesting thing about this society, or it used to be until the evangelical Christians decided to screw it up for everybody. But the interesting thing is, you know, people can believe anything they want to. Where I draw the line, just like me, I can believe or disbelieve anything they want to. But where the line is drawn is when religious people get in my face or anybody's face and start telling me or telling someone else or telling you that your soul is condemned to eternal damnation because you don't accept the divinity of a rabbi that wandered around the Middle East 2,000 years ago with 12 other guys trying to get people to wise up and stop beating the hell out of each other and act like normal people. And, I mean, you know, the whole thing is just crazy producing. Hey, I got to leave it there, Alano. I'm glad you called in, man. Thanks a lot. Take care. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by, and thanks a lot, guys and gals, the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. They are active, real active tonight. You can join in anytime you like. Just go to MikeMalloy.com and follow the prompts and join in the fun. The message from the Malloy chat room and the Skype chat room. Happy holidays, Mike, Kathy, and Molly. Happy holidays back at you guys, too. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. This is about the 15th or 20th time these folks have sponsored an hour, and it's very much appreciated. Indeed. All right. Now, here comes Wolfowitz. What's the history on this one?
Okay. This is where it gets a tiny bit confusing. So back in 2003, when we played that the same Nick from Warsaw.
Little Rummy Boy.
What had happened was, say, the week before that show, he called in and sang Little Rummy Boy. Then our webmaster at the time, Mark Marshall, put it to music, and we played it on our Christmas show on the 23rd, 2003. Later that same evening, Nick called back with this song, Here Comes Wolfowitz. So this is the same program, although the piece that we played earlier, Little Rummy Boy Set to Music, was one that he had called in previously that we then had remastered. And then, okay, but this is all from the same show.
Okay, so here
and is... And to make it more confusing, this is all thanks to a listener named Jim... what's his last name?
Pecorino? No, wait a second. Where'd it go?
Who dug deep, deep, deep into the WhiteRose.com archives to find some of these vintage clips. Otherwise, we would not have them tonight for your listening
pleasure. And all the stuff is available at Ben Birch's White Rose Society.
If you keep digging, it's a labyrinth in there.
Okay. But,
Here Comes Wolfowitz.
This is Nick from...
Warsaw, Ohio.
Warsaw, Ohio. Go ahead, Nick.
All right, we're talking with Nick in Warsaw, Ohio, who sang us a song a cappella, and our webmaster put it to music. And you have another one. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm back here.
Okay, let's hear the other one, Nick.
Okay, this is sung to the tune of Here Comes Santa Claus.
Here Comes Santa Claus, a la Nick from Warsaw, Ohio, where it is snowing.
Yes.
All right.
Here comes Wolfowitz, here comes Wolfowitz, all his policies bring destruction and shock and awe to Iraqi families. Bombs are falling, babes are bawling, bloody bodies ignite.
Oh,
hear your children cry, kiss your Escobar, Wolfowitz comes tonight.
Oh,
here comes Wolfowitz, here comes Wolfowitz, all through the Mideast, waging wars with countries who can defend themselves the least. Level the cities without pity and send in the army to smite. Those who huddle in the rubble, Wolfowitz comes tonight. Here comes Wolfowitz, here comes Wolfowitz, better dig a hole. Severed heads and body parts are bouncing off the wall. Our troops ain't slacking cause they're packing depleted uranium rounds. That caused mutations for generations since Wolfowitz came to town. Here comes Wolfowitz, here comes Wolfowitz, hear his victims howl. Tomahawk missiles and cluster bombs are tearing out their bones. If you survive and you're alive but saw your family cut down, you might have a mind to join Al-Qaeda since Wolfowitz came to town.
Oh, God. Oh, shit. You are a very disturbed man.
I know.
You know that. I love it, Nick.
Yeah, my wife told me the whole thing.
Whoa. I forgot how graphic that song is. Oh, my God.
Something for the kids.
Something for the kiddies. Yeah, well, it can't be all adult stuff all the time. I wonder what happened to Nick in Warsaw. I wonder what happened to Warsaw, Ohio. You know? We know what happened to Ohio, but I wonder what happened to Warsaw and to Nick. Jean is in San Francisco. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Mike. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you.
So great to hear you suggest to the previous caller a course in comparative religion.
Yeah, yeah.
We really need it, and it's amazing. Even when we seek it, I'm always finding out new things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because so much has been hidden, so much is taboo
mm-hmm.
to tell people in our bizarre society. Like when you think that our entire European Western civilization, our calendar, our sense of time. Is based on a belief that a man named Jesus was born.
Mm-hmm.
And that unproven legend is the basis of our study of history.
Right.
We put everything on the timeline of a legend. So no wonder it's difficult for us to sort stuff out.
It is, and it's difficult, I think, for people, certainly on a conscious level, but probably deeply on an unconscious level, to peel themselves away from religious belief, especially... And I don't mean to pick on Christianity, but except when it becomes as political and it's used as such a sledgehammer as it is now. But to peel yourself away from that and just get a moment where you can allow your rational mind to take a look. And again, I want to emphasize that, you know, I do not refute or dispute a person's spiritual nature. You know, I spent a lot of time in the YMCA when I was a kid growing up, and we had the three pillars: mind, body, spirit. And I don't have any problem with spiritual growth, spiritual development, spiritual questing. It's religion that is so horrible to me, and just completely destroys the idea of a spiritual quest or
well, free thinking is needed for that quest.
That's true.
And this is one of the things I learned just recently that just blew me away. It was a fascinating piece of the puzzle. It was back to where the Catholic Church...
Jean, can you hold on?
Sure.
All right, I've got to do a break. We're at the top of the hour. If you'll hold on, we'll come back and pick it up right there, okay?
Thanks much.
All right, stay right there. This is the holiday program on The Molloy Show. Stick around, we have another hour. And coming up next hour, we have some stuff that... I think you're really, really going to appreciate Mike Molloy Radio Gumshoe at Christmas from 2 years ago. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program, the holiday version, edition. This hour is sponsored by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch. And their message, cancer, heart disease, birth defects. These are the gifts the coal industry gives to Appalachia every day. Help Coal River Mountain Watch put an end to it. Go to crmw.net and be part of the solution. crmw.net. We appreciate the sponsorship from this human rights organization, Coal River Mountain Watch. And they have sponsored, three nights now, I think, Kathy, in a row. And I hope that you have checked out their website, crmw.net. This is one of those organizations that does what it can to try to stop the continual corporatist murder of people in this country and the continuing corporatist ongoing assault to make people sick. So check it out, all right? crmw.net. And as it says in the message here, be part of the solution. Thank you, and thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch for the sponsorship. Now back to Gene in San Francisco. We were talking about the value of comparative religion. That's how it started out. Where were we?
You mentioned the primacy of the spiritual urge. Mm-hmm. And I started to say that, free thinking is a necessity for that kind of spiritual seeking or the truth seeking you have on your show all the time. And a piece of the puzzle about that just popped up in some of my reading that I was doing. And it goes back to the Catholic Church when they were trying to hold on to their religious monopoly in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're taught in school, that's what I was taught in school, that the challenge to the Vatican Christianity was just the Protestant Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a simultaneous Reformation that I just learned about. It was a real desire for light, philosophically,
mm-hmm.
in thinking. And it was the Hermeticist Reformation that was simultaneous. And if it hadn't been for the Hermeticist Reformation behind the scenes, not only would the Vatican have stood in the way of any ideas and free thinking that led to science, because they would continue to persecute the free thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so fascinating is that there was a direct line that completely leapt over the Catholic Church's frozen mythological stuff,
mm-hmm.
straight back to the ancient Egyptian astronomy and the ancient things that they had learned. And that had been forgotten because of Christianity.
Well, the studies that were conducted by the Arab people.
They kept alive many of the things.
They kept it alive while
from the ancients.
Well, Europe went into the Dark Ages and into superstition and mumbo jumbo and blaming disease on a pissed off or vengeful god. The only group, at least in what we consider the Western world, I don't know what was going on in India and China at the time, but or Japan, but the Arabs kept alive.
What they kept alive, Mike, was science via observation of nature, which was what the ancient Egyptians discovered.
Well,
and
there you go.
What I'm learning is that this kind of philosophy from their astronomy would never have been conducted through Copernicus and Giordano Bruno and Galileo and Newton, because the church never would have allowed that. There was this other group, these Hermeticists, and I suggest people look into how we have to thank ancient Africans in Egypt for the rediscovery of science, despite the Catholic Church.
Those are good points, Gene, and I appreciate you making them. Thanks a lot for
Happy holidays.
Thanks a lot for checking in. What Gene was talking about is, I think, is key, at least it has been to me, to the person who called in and said, why are you an atheist? religious constriction is so antithetical to the development of human beings. I mean, if you get right down to it, to the development of intellect and science and that quest, that questing nature that people have. And religion says no. Religion says don't evolve. As a matter of fact, they hate the word. Don't evolve. Stay right here. You know, the earth does not circle the sun. There is no such thing as evolution. And in order to be a thinker, in order to be someone who is capable of going where the mind wants to take us, is someone who casts aside, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm not making statements here that are cast in stone. They're just cast in stone for me. But someone who casts aside all that religious restrictive nonsense of, you know, retribution and death and burning and fire and hell and poison and Jesus is going to smash you and God is going to condemn you. It's just, it's crazy to me. It's crazy. And I refuse to subscribe to it at all. And, you know, I have a son who's 33, who was raised with no religious belief whatsoever. My theory then, when he was a kid, was to allow him to grow up without having his mind encased in some kind of a belief system that he could never escape. So that when he reached the age of reason, whatever that is, he could make his own decision. And it worked out fine. I mean, Chris is a son that I'm extremely proud of in just about everything that he's done. And he has a deep moral sense that he developed on his own. I mean, I might have given him a little guidance or set limits where it concerned behavior, but when he was a kid, but he formed his own and his own moral universe, what he considers to be ethical behavior, to the point where he, like we were talking about last call, and I give him great credit for this, he went into a profession that involves helping people at the moment when they are in the deepest kind of physical pain, and that's being working in emergency medicine. And, you know, I have the deepest respect for my son beyond anything that I ever would imagine. You know, he never said, I want to go into medicine. He never said that. He never said, I want to be a nurse. He never said, I want to work in emergency medicine. When he was a kid growing up, he wanted to be a cowboy or a cop or a school teacher. But he never decided on this until he was in his late 20s. And then he did it. And so, I mean, here's a kid that was brought up with no religious training and therefore no religious restrictions, who made what I consider to be really good choices where it concerns alleviating people's suffering. So, and I expect to raise Molly the same way. And my two adult daughters were never brought up with any religious training, and they have done just fine. So, you know, the argument that you have to have some sort of religious structure in order to have a moral sense is nonsense. It's just not true. We'll be back.
Save my day of glory. I've seen my
the hour. And again, I want to mention this hour is sponsored by Coal River, C-O-A-L, Coal River Mountain Watch in West Virginia and other places. Their message, cancer, heart disease, birth defects, these are the gifts the coal industry gives to Appalachia every day. Help Coal River Mountain Watch put an end to it. Go to crmw.net, be part of the solution. So if you have a chance tonight or tomorrow or over the weekend, whatever, please check out that website, crmw.net. This is a human rights organization who is working to help you and me and our children and grandchildren and nieces and nephews and cousins breathe. So check them out, crmw.net. Paul is in Canton, Georgia, listening on Sirius. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. Happy holidays to you and
thank you.
And Kathy.
Thank you.
Following up a little bit about the religion thing.
Okay.
And my theory has always been that, you know, they always say that God created man. I think is that man created God because they
sure.
couldn't understand things when they were so, you know, and when we first started out.
Mm-hmm.
And I work in a grocery store, so I get a lot of comments from religious people, especially if I'm on my knees doing something. They'll be, oh, say one for me while you're down there. And a couple times I would say to them, boy, are you talking to the wrong person.
Right.
Because I'm an atheist as well. But the other thing was when I get into, like, lately, Molly's not around, is she?
No.
Okay. When I get into some heated debates with some of these people, my first thing is with that little girl that was killed around here,
mm-hmm.
is I would always say, well, if everything works the way you say, why didn't your God just give this guy a heart attack when he's ready to do this and kill him instead?
Right.
If he's so all-powerful, what could this little girl have possibly done to deserve this?
That's right. Yeah. Let me just say to people, it was a particularly horrific case here of a 7-year-old child who was abducted by someone who worked in the apartment complex where she lived. And they found her body, I think, the same day or the next day. And the police said some things that can't be repeated on the radio.
Exactly.
But you know what the usual response is when you bring that up. People will say, well, you know, God had a plan for her life. And to that, yeah. I say, you know, I just want to smash you in your face when you say something like that.
Well, I think from talking to me so often, they don't quite use that anymore. They just kind of get PO'd and walk away or change the subject of something else because they
right.
don't have an answer. You know?
Right, right.
And I've been this way since I was like probably 12 or 13 when I was studying for my confirmation for my parents because they wanted to because I was brought up in a Catholic household.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you read the stuff and there's contradictory stuff all over the place and it just made no sense. And then as you got older, you realized how much less it made sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I hear you. All right, Paul, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Yep. Have a good night.
All right, sir, you too. Take care. Where's Bridget? I don't think the phone is hung up, so I can get to Bridget. Okay? There's Bridget.
Hey there.
Hi, Bridget.
I just couldn't resist calling.
Well, let me tell people, this is Bridget Wolf, who wrote the Solstice piece for us the other night, and who is also one of our two ethical advisors for the program. Hi, from way out there in Oregon. How are you tonight, Bridget?
I'm just wonderful, Mike. Thank you very much.
And how's John?
John is equally wonderful.
Great.
And we're through the majority of the craziness and can now get into doing a few of our own things for Christmas.
Good.
For the holiday. I wanted to comment on all the religion and spirituality stuff.
Can you do it in 2 minutes?
I could try.
Go ahead.
The main thing that has always frustrated me about religion that's about somebody in the sky is that what it takes away from humans is their relationship to each other and to the earth
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
to all of the other living things around them. When you get into a place where you're focused on what's up there, the tendency for the psyche is to completely forget about what's here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most destructive part of religion.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and it absolves people of the responsibility of growth and understanding and connection while we're alive. I mean, this is what we've got. This is it. We're staring at in the face every morning when we get up. And the idea of, well, you know, I can live any kind of life I want, and at the last, I can be just as irresponsible as I care to, because it doesn't matter, because I have my home in heaven. No, you don't. You have your home right here.
Well, and even beyond that, if I'm constantly worried about what God thinks or doing what, you know, what God wants, I forget completely to find out what, you know, what the person next to me needs.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Or what the earth needs.
That's
what,
right.
What the land that I want.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Bridget, thanks for checking in.
Hey, happy holidays.
Thank you.
Much love to you, Kathy, and Molly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for Molly tonight. John and I were just howling.
Well, we appreciate it. And hug to John, okay?
Absolutely.
All
thank
right.
you, Mike.
All right, take
Bye.
Care, Bridget. Take care. We'll be right back with Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, Christmas edition. Stick around.
Jay Farner.
Before the hour. This now brings us to, all right, Kathy, you want to give the introduction for this? Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
Okay, well, this is a little more contemporary. Bob Alexander sent me this link. This is something you and I recorded back in 2009, but it seems just as relevant today as it did then.
Here we go.
The Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Happy holidays, truth seekers from coast to coast, border to border, and around the globe. Join us tonight as we listen to A Christmas Story from Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
Hi, truth seekers. It was the night before Christmas. Molly was nestled all snug in her bed, and I was about to tell her all about the time her mommy and I went down to Fox headquarters.
This isn't the one where it turns out where it was all just a bad dream, is it?
No, this is a new episode. You're thinking of episode number 4, The Fortress of Fox.
That's good. We haven't been doing these things long enough to get away with a rerun.
Well, anyway, as I was saying, it all started when I received a phone call from my contact down at Fox.
It sure sounds like the other one.
No, really. This is a new story.
But didn't the other one start with a phone call from your...
No. That one started when he knocked on the door.
But didn't he call first?
Yeah, but... okay, look. Just cue up the Christmas transitional music.
I'm just saying. Seems awfully familiar.
It's just a story device, Kathy. That's all. You know, a radio thing. Malloy here. Yeah? Yeah? Well, when's he supposed to go on? Who else knows about this? We'll be over there as soon as we can.
Who was it?
My contact down at
Fox. We know that part already. What's going on?
Well, later today, they're going to broadcast Glenn Beck's Christmas show live.
So?
Well, Beck's gone missing. He's missed all the rehearsals, and according to my contact, Beck's been acting pretty strange of late.
Strange? When has he not been strange?
No time for semantical mind games, baby. The story's too hot to pass up. Let's go. We sped over to Fox headquarters and parked behind the studio complex. I called my contact on my cell, and he was there to let us in.
What happened to all their security?
I guess they got their hands full trying to find the head teabagger.
We started searching for Beck in the lower levels of Fox. He could be hiding anywhere.
It's pretty creepy down here. If this were a horror movie, this is the part where you'd say, why don't they all just get out of the house? I told you so.
The scream came from behind that door. It's the makeup room. Kathy, stand behind me.
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told. It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Well, he's not in there.
Who was that?
I don't know. I think it might have been Greta Van Susteren. Gee, that guy seemed awfully harsh. Malloy. Yeah. Yeah. Where is he? What floor? We'll be right there.
They find him?
Yeah, he's barricaded himself in the main control room. He's talking to Roger Ailes on the phone. And he's got a gun.
We arrived outside the control room just in time to hear Beck blaring through the loudspeakers.
I'm gonna lose my mind today.
What do you suppose set him off?
Well, someone like Beck, you never know. Could be anything. A bad hair day. A black guy in the White House. Maybe the humidity. Anything.
Get off my phone, you little pinhead!
Through the glass windows of the control room, we could see Beck pacing back and forth like a caged animal. A big, sweaty, caged animal.
Get off my phone!
This doesn't look good.
Get off my phone!
Beck threw down the phone and picked up a gun. A .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world that could blow his head clean off, and raised it to his temple.
You are the secret. You're the answer.
Mike, we've got to do something.
I just love my country, and I fear for it.
We've got to break down the door.
I am not a journalist. I'm sorry.
He missed! How could he miss?
He missed again.
I'm sorry.
Oh, for crying out loud.
He did it. He missed the barn.
Kathy, we've got to get out of here.
Oh, I don't know. At this rate, I don't think he's going to hurt himself.
No, you don't understand. Haven't you ever seen a James Bond movie? And sooner or later, a stray bullet's going to hit one of those monitors. The sparks and flames are going to start shooting out. And that'll cause a chain reaction. And then this whole place will blow.
That's impossible. Computers don't explode if you shoot the monitor.
If it works that way in the movies, it works that way in radio. Come on. World, and it blew right up at his face. Kathy and I made it out to what was left of the parking lot. And then I thought I heard something far off in the distance. The sound of Christmas bells? Kathy, do you hear that?
What? Yes, I hear it.
What day is it?
Why, it's Christmas Eve, Mike.
Then at least for one day, we're free. We're free. The hate, the fear-mongering, and the lies will stop for at least one day. Sure, they'll build it back in again. There's too much money at stake for them not to. But at least for a little while, the voices of insanity have been silenced. And isn't that the best Christmas gift of all?
Singers, and be sure to tune in again for yet another thrilling episode taken from the case files of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
Oh my God, Bob Alexander is just an absolute genius. He wrote that and produced it. And I'll tell you, that sounds as good today, Kathy, as it did 2 years ago. That was 2 years ago. Wow.
That's good. If Bob's listening tonight, thank you, pal. He is. This guy is so talented. But he wrote that and produced it, and he provided Kathy and me with the script. That was fun to do. He emails us the scripts. We voice them, and then he puts them together. The magic of radio. That sounded better than I remembered it, didn't it? Huh? It did to me.
I always cringe when I hear myself trying to act. It's just so horrifying.
You sounded great. No, you sounded great. It worked. I mean, that's the cool part of your character. You just be you.
That'd be all I can be.
Oh, God. Anyway, thanks to Bob Alexander, who wrote and produced that all those years ago. Well, it's only two. That's from 09, right? Wow. We got time to squeeze in a call? I think we do. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Happy holidays, yes.
Thank you. Back at you.
I'm really looking forward to the day when Molly is ready to get ready to pass on the heel to Molly and let her run the show.
Oh, my God. I hope something intervenes between now and that day.
I don't blame you for saying that.
Oh, Lord.
I wanted to weigh in on the religion thing like everybody else. But
sure.
You know how it is. You got to put in your two cents.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm an agnostic. It was a hard-fought road getting here.
I'll bet.
Just like it with everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And any of the organized religions, as far as I can see, you know, are exactly as you say. They're ways of manipulating minds and, mm-hmm. and consolidating power.
Yeah, I left that part out. You're absolutely right. Consolidating power, I think, is one of the most important aspects of it.
Yes, I think that's how I got started, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It also is a great way of promoting ignorance.
Mm.
Not just fostering it, but promoting it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as far as I'm concerned, they're basically very, very destructive. However, on the other hand, I have a hard time with getting to the position you're at. At one time, I thought I was there, and then I backed off and said, you know what? I don't see how anybody can come to the conclusion that they are definitively sure that there is not a supreme being.
Well, my feeling about that, Chuck, and we're about to go to a break here, my feeling about that is just to trust whatever instincts or whatever inner voice that a person has. And my instincts and my inner voice said no such thing could possibly exist. And even if it did, it doesn't matter. So, that's kind of the choice I've made. But I hear you. Agnosticism is, it's a good way to go, too. Chuck, I have to leave it there. We'll talk about this again. Thanks a lot, pal. We'll be right back for O Holy Nightmare. Stay with us. Christmas tree filled a whole room with pine verbium, your outstretched hands hold on to family history, cut through the shadows of the wintry gloom. 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by the Coal River Mountain Watch. Please go to their website, crmw.net. This is, very essentially put, a human rights organization. And their message, cancer, heart disease, birth defects, these are the gifts the coal industry gives to Appalachia every day. Help Coal River Mountain Watch put an end to it. Go to crmw.net and be part of the solution. And it was an honor to have these folks sponsor three times this week, I think. Thank you. All right. In response to a rapidly diminishing number of requests, if everybody has their earplugs ready, we are now going to play. Is there an intro that I said from a couple of years ago? We're just going to do the whole thing? Okay. Let's just move right over to the Wayback Machine.
All right, we want to do Holy Night here. This is now the first couple of first couple of notes sound a little warped, but that's just the way it came to us in MP3. It's just hang in there, because this is it straightens right out and flows into a very beautiful Christmas song. So, and this was sent to us by the Armstrongs, John and Peggy. And John and Peggy, this is just a wonderful thing you've done here. We are very humbled by the fact that you sent this to us. So without further ado, O Holy Night.
They shine. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pine. So bad, it's what a thrill of hope. The weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
Is it over? Is it over? I'll tell you, it just wouldn't be.
This gets better and better every
year.
It does.
It wouldn't be Festivus without Oh Holy Night. Listen, hear the dogs outside? Hear those hound dogs out there? A couple of places over here?
I had to move all the glassware.
Oh, man. I just, I really do like that. I don't know the history of how that song was put together. I'm sure it's out there someplace on YouTube or Bluetooth or RedTube or something. But to whomever first sang that, recorded that, thank you. We have been more than happy to play that every year for the past, what? When did we first play that? 2003. Oh, my God.
That was the original that we just played. That was a little snippet. Again, thanks to Jim for sending that to us, because I wouldn't have known where to find it.
And all the stuff that you heard tonight from the Wayback Machine is available at Ben Birch's site, whiterosesociety.org. He has archives on enough of us in radio that if he ever decides that he wants to make money blackmailing us, he's going to get rich. Listen, thanks, everybody. I'm off tomorrow night. Brad Friedman will be here. We'll be back Monday. So take care. Keep it lit. Happy holidays. I'm Mike Malloy.